It is now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker, Michelle Barnett from Fresno, and she says, faith without works is dead.
Hi, my name is Michelle, and I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. And I say recovered because the big book says that we will recover. Thank you, Bill, for inviting me here to speak. It's been a few years. I've spoke here before. A bigger group tonight than last time, but I'm honored. And welcome to the newcomers and anyone that's fairly new. You're in a really good place. I hope that I say something this evening that can plant a seed or something that'll keep you coming back. My sobriety date is December 1st, 2006. So I celebrated yesterday. Thank you. And I have a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous to the depths of my soul. I think what I'll do is I will share a little bit about what it was like and what happened and what it's like now. I started drinking at a very young age. I was 13 when I started drinking. And I have no excuse to be an alcoholic. I had a wonderful childhood. I had both parents were married the majority of my childhood, and I had two brothers and a sister that loved me very, very much. I was not mentally abused, physically abused, sexually abused. I had a roof over my head. We went to church every Sunday. I was educated. I had friends. I had wonderful holidays and vacations, and I had a pretty normal childhood, so I really have no excuse to be alcoholic. I just kind of considered myself a chosen one and very blessed at that. And so, but I was, I moved from Arizona out to California when I was 12 years old. And when I moved here, I played with dolls at 12 years old. And all the other girls that I met when I first moved here were already kind of dabbling in alcohol and drugs, and, you know, at 12 and 13 years old. And that was very foreign to me. My dolls went under the bed really quick, and I was not cool, and I didn't feel like that I fit in at all. So I started drinking. Drugs are a little bit of my story, no disrespect to Alcoholics Anonymous, but for some reason, alcohol was my true demon. I was able to quit using drugs a lot quicker than I was alcohol. And when I started drinking, though, it was hard and fast. I have no alcoholics or drug addicts in my family, so that's another reason why I consider myself a chosen one, because it wasn't like it ran in my family history or anything. And so when I started drinking, we would sit down with a bottle of hard liquor and play Buzz. And I don't know if anybody here knows what Buzz is. I don't know if they even still play it anymore, but, you know, it's in increments of seven. Anything that has a seven, any number that has a seven in it, or anything, something times whatever makes 27 or 17 or 14 or whatever it may be, as you go around your circle, if you don't say Buzz on that number, then you have to chug. And you have to chug for like 3 seconds. And I used to screw up on purpose just so I got a chug. And ultimately blackouts, you know, I was a total blackout drinker, rolling around. And, you know, we'd go to sock hops and, you know, 13, 14 years old and taking bottles of Southern Comfort was one of my favorites. And we'd just sneak it in and we could drink it go in the bathroom and pour it in our 7-Up, and you know, we would ultimately leave the party early while, or the dance early while our parents thought we were still there, and we would go out and get more alcohol, pimped alcohol all the time. Very easy back then. I mean, one night rolling around in the gutter in the rain, leaving in like one outfit, and one of our friends came to pick us up because my girlfriend called somebody to come and get me, and his parents weren't home, so they took me to his mom's house, and they put me in his jeans and his t-shirt, which were way too big and falling off of me, and they took me home. And this was the first time that my parents had ever seen me like this, and they took me home, and this guy was just really super sweet and amazing because he had no fear of walking up to my door with my dad and my mom standing there and taking me to my parents like this. And they really appreciated him helping me like that. But I'm standing there and my mom looks at me and she's like, "Where are your clothes?" And I'm like, "These are them." And they were like, "No, those aren't the clothes that you left in." And, he hands them the bag with my, dirty, soaking wet clothes. And, and everybody talked about it, the following day at school or on Monday. And, you talk about that incomprehensible demoralization and just embarrassing. So that's at 14 years old. My drinking got progressively worse. I had met my ex-husband when I was 15 years old, and he was quite a drinker also. Our lives and everything that we did morphed around drinking. If I went to a party, I was drinking before we went to the party, and I was drunk before I got there. If we were going somewhere in the car, like maybe to the coast or something, ice chest in the back seat, VO, tequila, whatever it was, right there in the back seat with me. It didn't get me in too much trouble when I was in high school. I was able to maintain it during the day I didn't drink at all. It was nights and weekends. And what ultimately happened was my ex-husband and I had a very rocky relationship. It was kind of a love-hate relationship. He was quite a bit older than me. I started going to bars very young. I got a fake ID and we were hitting bars all the time. And it was a not violent, like I was being physically abused. His was emotional and a verbal abuse. And, I always thought it was something that I was doing wrong. Constantly trying to change myself to please him. And, I didn't know then what I know now, but, I was never going to be good enough ever for him. But I continued trying. We had a beautiful daughter out of that relationship. I have a daughter who's 21 years old now, and we have a wonderful relationship. So during that relationship, towards the end, I wound up with my first DUI. We went over to the coast, luckily left my daughter with a friend, so we didn't have her with us. She was only 4 at the time. And I wound up in Monterey with my ex-husband, and he was so blitzed, he could barely walk. We had a friend, everywhere we went, we had bartenders as friends. And one of our friends was a bartender at the Chart House there in Monterey on Cannery Row, and he helped me, literally the two of us, get my ex-husband into the car, and he was begging us, "Please don't drive like this, Michelle, don't leave like this." And my ex was, calling me names, getting that effing car, and I was, embarrassed again, and I was like, "No, I'll be okay. So we didn't get far. We leave the Chart House, get up to Lighthouse, and next thing I know, boom, the lights go on behind me, and I get pulled over. I remember absolutely everything about that night. So he's passed out in the car. I get out. The officers ask me if I would blow. And I'm like, sure, why not? So I blow. And I blow a .36. And they're like, this thing's broke, right? They had me do some sobriety tests. You know, I passed all the sobriety tests. But unfortunately, the way I blew, they could not believe I was a .36. And I was walking and talking, and needless to say, they handcuffed me. He jumps out of the car, sees me getting handcuffed, and, like, goes ballistic. So they arrest him for being drunk in public, and the two of us get taken to the drunk tank. So that was my first experience with the law and the start of my legal problems with my drinking. And so I was court-ordered to Alcoholics Anonymous at that point. That was back in 1998. And, you know, I at that point had some, like, inklings maybe in the back of my mind that I may have a problem, but I really didn't know for sure. And so when I went to court over the DUI, I requested for my case to be transferred over, because I lived in Madera at the time, to be transferred over there so I could do my community service and my AA meetings and everything that was required. And there was a meeting in Madera at that time. It was called the Scout Hut. And I don't know if any of you are familiar with Madera and the meetings there, but it was an amazing meeting. You know, I walked into the meeting, and I was in such a pity pot. I was sniveling and whining and crying about all these legal problems that I had, the fine, the money it was going to cost me, and everything that I had to do. I had to do these AA meetings. You know, I had to. And, you know, everybody at that meeting were absolutely amazing. They opened their arms to me. They hugged me and told me that everything was going to be okay. They told me that I wasn't any different than anybody else. Because, you know, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous that first time, I felt less than. I felt like I was just worthless. And I was embarrassed to be around you all because, you know, I was listening to your stories and I was listening to everything that you had to share and your experience, strength, and hope. And you were just amazing to me. And I didn't think that I could ever, ever match up to any of you. And so, I mean, it made it easy for me to keep coming back. But, you know, I didn't get a sponsor. I only went to the meetings that I had to. It seemed like I couldn't wait to leave those meetings and get back to my bottle. And it was at that point when I was starting to hide it. I was hiding my bottle now because my ex-husband was already ticked off at me because I was the one that got the DUI and I was the one that, you know, caused us to have to pay all this money and, you know, and then I was suspended of my license and, you know, he had to drive me around where he needed to drive me around and, you know, it was my fault. And so, you know, I started hiding my bottle so he didn't know I was drinking. And I would talk about a closet drinker. I literally hid my bottle in the closet. And so when he was like out in the front room, I would sneak back into the bedroom and I would open my closet door and go in there and take some drinks. And even still then, after blowing a .36, going to jail and having these legal problems, I still didn't think that I had that big of a problem. You know, I didn't know anything about alcoholism. And so our marriage got progressively worse. My drinking got progressively worse. And then it got violent. So after it got kind of physical, I ended up leaving him. I got custody of my daughter. I still was maintaining my sobriety during the day and still only drinking at night. But after I left him, I spiraled. I ended up getting a job and losing that job very rapidly because I started drinking during the day. And I was sitting at work one day and I started shaking really bad. And that was my first experience with DTs. Still didn't know what was wrong. I thought I was just sick. So I had stopped going to AA because I finished what I was court ordered to do. Lost that job first. Then I lost my second job and I realized, you know what, I think I have a problem. So I went to my mom. I was living with my mom at the time after I left my ex-husband, and I went to her and I told her, I think I have a problem and I need help. I can't stop drinking. I've tried everything. And so she asked me where my bottle was. And my drink was, I loved whiskey. And I would just reek. It would just like seep out of my pores. And she said, you know, I knew there was a problem. I had a funny feeling. She said, but, you know, why don't you give me your bottle? We'll pour it out and we'll see what we can do. So I went to the trunk of my car, under the front seat of my car, in my purse, in my closet, in her bathroom, because I was hiding it from her. I figured if she knew I was going into her bathroom, she wouldn't think I was drinking. But little did I know, she was hearing my closet door creak, and she knew that I was going in there and drinking. So we poured all my bottles out that night, went to sleep. The next morning I got up and I was shaking like crazy. And it was at that point when I had grandma seizures. I had 3 grandma seizures right in front of my mom, and I landed face down after the third seizure and was not breathing. My mom was on the phone to 911, and they told her, don't touch her. Let her, you know, her body's going through something. And my mom was like, you know, forget that. So she shook me, and I took a breath. And whether or not I was supposed to die that day, if my mom wasn't there, I don't know. But for some reason, God wanted me here still. So I went into Salvation Army program. I lost custody of my daughter. My ex-husband got custody of my daughter at that point. She was 6 years old. And now I've lost jobs. I have lost custody of my daughter. I try Salvation Army. I was in that program for 6 months, stayed sober for 1.5 years, relapsed. And let me tell you, this disease is very progressive because it's... When I started drinking again, I started exactly where I left off. And I was totally obsessed again. And I tried Teen Challenge. I don't know if any of you know about the Teen Challenge program. I see a couple of people nodding their head. It's not for teenagers, obviously. I'm not a teenager, but it's a program for alcoholism and drug addiction, but they do not believe in the steps. It's all faith-based. So I tried that one. That one got me closer to my higher power, actually, but it still didn't work for me. I was out of that program a month later without going to AA, and I drank. So what happened was I ended up now with a metal plate in the side of my head. I got into a bicycling accident at a .24, and then I had a second DUI at a .24, and I rear-ended a couple going 65 miles an hour on 41 in Fresno. They were at a dead stop, and nobody was hurt. And it was at that point when the next morning when I got out of jail, I got down on my knees and I told God, because, you know, I had always believed in God. I was raised in an organized religion that I believed in God, but I feared Him. You know, I only prayed at night before I went to bed, and I prayed at meals. This is what I was taught. And, I mean, I just knew about God and heaven and hell and those type of things, but I never knew what it was like to have a personal relationship with God. And so after that second DUI, I got a phone call or a phone number for a woman I was told that was in Alcoholics Anonymous who had 9 years sober, and that she sponsored women. You need to call her. So I did. This woman did not know me from Adam. And I told her a little bit about my story on the phone, and she said to me, okay. She goes, tell me, she said, you think you're done? Are you willing to go to any lengths for your sobriety? And at that point, I believed that I was. And I told her, yes, absolutely. So this woman was married. She had children. She worked down in Corcoran, and she lived in Fresno. That woman would pick me up two nights a week when I got off work, and she would take me to meetings. And what she did was she taught me about commitment meetings. She said, Michelle, I have three commitment meetings a week that I go to. She said, I have one woman's, I have a breakfast one, and then I have a mixed meeting. She said, those commitment meetings I go to, she said, if I'm sick or I'm near death or if I'm out of town, she said, I skip my meetings. But she said, for nothing else do I skip my meetings. And then I go to as many other meetings that I want to, you know. So I was like, that sounds like a lot to me, you know, back here. But the way she was showing me, this woman had so much fun in sobriety. And I still didn't understand, though, that this woman would, like, work all day, pick me up, take me to a meeting, and where I lived compared to where she lived, she took me out, like, north of Fresno. I lived on 41, and then she lived way out on Ashland in 99, and she wouldn't get home sometimes until 9:30 at night, and, you know, she's got a husband waiting at home for her. She never asked me for gas money. It was just amazing. She taught me about being in service. She tried to tell me about sponsoring. I'm like, nope, don't want to go there. You know, I can't even take care of myself. How can I help anybody else? And so I continued on with these meetings. My service was going to meetings and sharing when I was called on, because she told me, you know, when you get called on, you know, just even if you are, like, you're embarrassed, you don't want to talk, or if, you know, you don't feel you have anything to talk about, you know, share why you're there. Share a little bit about AA, a little something. That's being in service. I would cut cakes, you know, I would help with the coffee, I would clean up afterwards, and, you know, she would wait while I did this, and then she would take me home. So that first year of my sobriety, she took me to a conference up in Grass Valley. This was my first experience with Alcoholics Anonymous, and going out of town or going to a conference was Wayne Butler, Wayne B., who does an emotional sobriety conference. I don't think he does the 3-day one anymore. I think he does just a 1-day deal now. But this was a 3-day conference up in Grass Valley. My sponsor paid for my ticket for the weekend, and all I had to do basically was just pay for my food. And this was the first time that I really realized that Alcoholics Anonymous wasn't just about not drinking. You know, he teaches about an emotional sobriety. And I was like, wow, what a concept. You know, because, you know, I told you what a great set of parents I had. My parents were great providers, and they were loving, and they were kind. But my mother doesn't really cope with resentments, being judgmental. She's a wonderful, beautiful lady, but she doesn't have very good coping skills, and I was not taught those when I was growing up. So I sat there for this whole weekend and laughed and cried and had the most amazing weekend with my sponsor. I was just starting my fourth step with her, and you know, I was in my eighth month of sobriety, so I don't suggest that, waiting that long if possible. But you know, what Wayne Butler talked about was that he got his sponsees through their steps in 90 days. And I was like, what? it, 90 days, and before they were through with their steps, they were already sponsoring people. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. Because, you know, I also learned that steps 1, 2, and 3 are trusting in God, and there's no action at all to steps 1, 2, and 3. It's just you're admitting, you know, you came to believe, and that you would, you know, give your, you were willing to give your will and your life over to the care of God. And so there's no action in those first three steps. It's basically trusting in God. And then steps 4 through 11 are cleaning house. You know, getting rid of our resentments and all this junk, and learning about our character defects, and, you know, growing to become, for me, the kind of person I think that God would want me to be. And then 12 is giving back, is helping another alcoholic. And, I mean, in that whole weekend, I learned so much about Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was just amazing to me. And so that really pushed me to want to get my fourth step done. And once I got that writing done, which basically was the hardest part for me of this program, I also started learning a lot about having this God of my own understanding. You know, I wasn't very spiritual. I never blamed God for any of my problems. I never blamed God for my alcoholism. I knew after coming in here, because you told me that alcohol was not my problem. You told me that alcohol was my solution. And I would have never thought of that, ever. You know, I thought that all of my problems was because of my drinking. Well, I quickly found out from hearing all your stories that that's not the case. You know, alcohol was my solution, and it was for a long time, because it made me feel so different. It made me feel, you know, just better inside. And then, you know, ultimately what would happen, though, is after I would drink and cause all my wreckage, like losing my daughter and this, you know, metal plate in the side of my head and the relationships that I damaged with my family and friends, and, you know, not being able to hold a job and be self-supporting and all these things, you know, that was me. That was all me. And when I would stop drinking or get a little sober, if I got much sober, my problems were still there. You know, I wasn't doing anything to find a solution. I was staying in the problem all the time. You know, I was a victim for a long time. And you guys also taught me that, you know, my problems are of my own making. You know, I'm not a victim. I have a part in everything. So once I finished my fourth step, my sponsor and I sat there for 2 days. And I think that's probably when I got my real true first spiritual awakening. You know, I learned that having this God of my own understanding, that I no longer feared. You know, I always feared that if I did something wrong or if I was bad, you know, I was going to go to hell. But this God that I know today, and because of this program, is very kind and loving and forgiving and just powerful, absolutely powerful. You know, I have asked him every day for almost the last 9 years to help me to remove this obsession. Because I slept with my bottle. I shook when I didn't have a drink. And he's done that. He has done that, first of all, by putting Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. And then for you all sharing your experience, strength, and hope with me, showing me that, you know, I need to lean on God. You know, God first and foremost. And, you know, it started working for me. And I still, to this day, don't understand really, like, how it works. You know, all I know is that I kept doing what you suggested. And my sponsor got me through that fourth and fifth step, amazingly. She had so much patience with me. And, you know, I mean, my writing took a little bit of time, but my fifth step actually took 2 days. We packed a picnic lunch, an ice chest, a blanket, some chairs. We went down right on the San Joaquin River, and we spent 2 days, you know, me sharing my writing with her, all my resentments and my fears, my sex inventory, you know, just all of these things that had built up in my life for so long, and I shared with her. And, you know, she listened to me, and then she also shared some of her, you know, experiences with me that day. And we just, it was amazing. It was honestly me and her and God. I could feel the presence of God there. And it was like a stepping stone for me in my life where I felt like I had some type of serenity. And she swiftly got me through my remaining steps, my writing my amends. You know, she taught me a lot about how simple this program is. Keep it simple. You hear that? It's like the only way to do this program is to keep it simple. You know, an amends doesn't have to be a novel. It's basically not saying you're sorry, but telling someone, you know what, I was wrong. I learned that, you know what, I'm wrong in these things, and to point out my character defects, you know, with my fear. You know, I was wrong. I was selfish. I was self-centered. And with God's help, you know, I will never do that to you or anyone else ever again. And, you know, it all makes sense to me. Today, it all makes sense to me. And I made my life so complicated for so many years. I did. Nobody else. I did. So what I learned is that I was able to, and I truly believe that this is why I say I'm the chosen one out of my family. I truly believe that this is what God wanted for me in my life, is He wanted me to be able to give back and help other alcoholics. I do sponsor women today, and I know that it's not me, it's God working through me. It's my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous that I'm able to help other women get through their steps. You know, I want to tell you, when I first started realizing this, that I was alcoholic and I was admitting it, and I really started working the program, I had this fear that at first that my life was over. You know, I mean, what am I going to do without alcohol? I slept with my bottle. Everything that I did revolved around alcohol. What am I going to do? What kind of life am I going to have? When my sponsor found out that I couldn't drive, she said, you know, I know this guy that lives by you. He has these Sober Bowl parties every year. And she said, so why don't I take you over to his house for the Sober Bowl party, and, you know, I can introduce you, and maybe he can help you get into work every day. And I thought, well, you know, that doesn't sound like a bad idea. So I go to the Sober Bowl party, and I meet this guy, and, you know, he's just a really nice guy, but I was not physically or, romantically attracted to him in any way at all. And winds up I'm married to him today. Who would have known? But what happened was, he was such a gentleman, and he did. He helped me get to work every day. We spent a lot of time, a lot of hours talking about Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, he told me that he sponsored many men in the program. He worked full time. He has a family. And, you know, I started listening to his passion about the program. And, you know, all of these, you know, things that he's been doing in his life, you know, AA function and outside of AA. You know, his life was so full and so huge. And I loved hearing him talk about, you know, prayer and meditation, which was another thing that I learned about. You know, I like I told you, we used to get down on our knees and pray at night before I went to bed, or pray at meals, and that was it. But, you know, if I didn't do my prayer and meditation in the morning, he would actually pull the car over on the side of the road, and we would sit there and do a prayer and meditation in the morning before he would drop me off at work. And so I started, like, really getting interested in this guy. I was, like, looking at him in a different light. And so, I mean, eventually, of course, I fell in love with him. And we dated for many, many years. But before I started this relationship with him, I told him, I said, you know, I don't know if I could have a relationship with you. And he said, oh, why? And I said, well, because you have all these sponsees, you go to all these meetings, you know, I just don't think that I would have enough time with you. And he said, let me tell you something, Michelle. He said, this is something that I learned while in the program. He said, all the women that I've ever been with before, and he was married 3 times before me, all the women that I've been with before, he said, we had like this sick relationship. We were like enmeshed with each other, and I had to know where she was all the time, and she had to know where I was all the time, and it was just not, it was sick. It was not a healthy relationship. And he said, so I'm going to tell you how this has worked for me, learning what I've learned in this program. He said, what I've learned is that, first of all, you put God first. Then you put Alcoholics Anonymous second, because that's what we need to do in this program, is to give back. And that 12th step to help other alcoholics. He said, I can guarantee you that you put all these other things first, God and Alcoholics Anonymous and helping others. He said, I can guarantee you that God will provide enough time for us. And I was like, you're not willing to give up any sponsees for me? And he was like, no. And I was like, okay. And I said, well, how long do we have to keep going to these meetings? And he said, until you like them. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I grew to love meetings. I grew to absolutely adore him because he was such an inspiration for me. And, you know, it's so amazing what God has done in my life. You know, to go from this hopeless, helpless, ignorant alcoholic, you know, who slept with her bottle, who could not carry any kind of a relationship with anyone or hold a job, to being today married, have my daughter in my life, which we talk almost every day. I, 2 years ago, obtained an associate's degree in paralegal. I graduated from high school and never went to college. I went to college and got a degree. I am in my current job. I've been there for 3 years. And I don't have a perfect life. I don't, you know, take credit for anything that I have today. I'll take credit for some willingness, but I got that from you. I got the willingness from God and from Alcoholics Anonymous, from you sharing your experience, strength, and hope with me and showing me exactly how this works, and that it's a we program, and that, you know, my life can be so much simpler today. So I like the fact that I can open the big book. My sponsor, she pulls no punches, let me tell you. Okay, she tells me all the time how self-righteous I am. And she does it lovingly. You know, she does it lovingly because I don't see it, she sees it. And she walks me through things. She's got me to where I am going to start doing it. I have to be honest. I don't do a 10th step every night. My husband does. But I'm going to start doing a 10th step every night. And we're going to really start working on character defects. I mean, we're constantly trying to stay in the book. And I hope that anybody here tonight that's new or fairly new heard something that might want to help you to keep coming back, because let me tell you, this program is absolutely amazing. And faith without works is dead. Thanks.